tonight's program is liable to be excessively sickening due to various philosophical considerations which will come into play during the following program, George. Of course, when you get into that, God knows where it's all going to end. So would you please bring it up next, please?
I just thought I'd warn you. I'm trying to be honest.
I mean, it ain't easy.
Gee whiz, I'd like to salute, before we get started here, B.L. Simmons, 83, of Tallahassee. He's built a three-window mausoleum where he plans to sit in a rocking chair after his death. Watching and waiting, he says, we quote here, for the second coming. I quote him here. Not many folks believe the Lord is coming back, but I know he is, and that's why I'll be here, just watching, waiting, sitting in my rocking chair, just waiting. Mr. Simmons put the finishing touches on a concrete block tomb in Old Moody Cemetery. He made arrangements. He says, I just want to be sitting with my easy chair with my back to the wall. I'm waiting for it all to start all over again. He may be right. We're sitting here laughing. He may be the only one that's going to score.
That reminds me, I shouldn't, you know, this, as I say, of course, this is what happens since the beginning of the week. You always feel like, what the hell? Well, actually, you know how you feel. You really do. The weekend, I suspect, more wars have been created by failed weekends than any other single factor in human existence. I just wonder how many wars have been contemplated on Monday. because you see, the weekend is very important to people. There is a thing floating around in the back of your head all the time that it's going to happen this weekend. This is going to be the ultimate groovy, fantastic, totally ecstatic weekend. Then what happened? Nothing. You go up and down the escalator three or four times at Alexander's. Saturday, you know, it's the big weekend. It starts to rain. You know. So the big high point is to go down and get yourself a double hamburger at McDonald's. It's the big point of the night. Oh, man. So, naturally, Monday is a bad day. And I don't know why I'm thinking about this. I'm reading about this old duffer sitting there, you know, with his back to the wall and in his rocking chair in a mausoleum. It reminds me of a story I once read when I was a kid. I read this story. See, almost everybody is infected by stuff he doesn't even hardly remember. I mean, you know, and I don't agree with you know, the Freudians who believe that every big moment in your life has to do with something involving sex or, you know, some big traumatic thing. Your daddy says he doesn't love you, all that jazz. Oh, no, I think that there are other things which scar the soul far deeper that are never discussed. It's like one time I'm sitting in study hall, see? There was Mr. Wilson, and he's walking around, and Mr. Wilson was in charge of the study hall. He taught history, see, so he's walking around in there, and I am supposed to be reading something, you know, official book, like Silas Marner, some jazz like that, see? But actually, I got this magazine, which I found on the steps, going up the, you know, up to the third floor in school. I find this magazine, and I'm reading a short story in it. Now, I don't know whether any of you ever heard of this short story. It's about this guy that lives in this old house, see? He's very rich. And would you please, Nick, get ready for it. I'm gonna need that here in a second now. See, I'm sitting there in study hall, little realizing I'm about to have a terrible traumatic experience. And everybody else is sitting around there reading stuff like geography, algebra, and Esther Jane Albury is sitting up there in the front there, and she's working away, and I can see her. And it's a calm day. Can you remember, you know how it was to be in study hall, just sort of calm, everything sort of drowsing away. It's kind of a droopy, drowsy, warmish day. And I'm reading the story. And it started out, you know, the stories that I was used to reading as a kid, you know, usually pretty straightforward stuff. You know, Sam the Young Shortstop was a typical story I read. Or G8 and his Battle Aces. And his eyes were always narrowing the slits as he put his deadly spad into a dive of ripping into the Devil Squadron. Well, you know, that kind of stuff. But this was a story about a guy who lived in an old house up in New England. I'm reading it. At first it was boring. And he has a son. And this guy's rich.
And he's building something in his basement. Oh, I knew guys that built stuff in the basement. You know, my old man, for example, he used to build stuff in the basement once in a while. In fact, well, that's another story. We won't even mention that tonight because that's totally irrelevant. Or as I prefer to say, irrelevant. It's totally irrelevant, which is a little slightly different meaning than relevant. And I'm sitting there reading his story. And it's a mysterious story. I'm beginning to realize this is a little more to it than was meeting the eye. And then it hit me. This whole guy is building a thing in the basement so that when he is dead, he could be preserved in his natural setting. And his thing is a gigantic refrigerator. Now, wait a minute. Listen to the story, you guys. Listen to this. It's a refrigerator, a glass case. And in this case, he had built the tee of a golf course that he always played on when he was alive. Like the seventh tee, see? And it was actually a reproduction of the seventh tee. It was grass, the whole bit, you know. And it said seven, you know, 428 yards. It was a tee, see? It says, tee up your ball here. And he died. The old guy decided when he had it finished, he was going to die. So he did. He died. And then his lawyer came. And, of course, the kid thought he hit the jackpot now. You know, he's got the old man's dough. And what happened was the lawyer says, no, I'm sorry, that there's one clause in the will, and that is that you must keep the refrigeration unit going in this tremendous thing that your old man built. That's the only clause. If you stop it, forget it. The money all goes to the International Chicken Breeders Association, of which he was a member. And, you know, for their retirement fund. Yeah, I mean, for old chickens that, you know, aren't laying so good anymore, they retire them, put them on this chicken farm. So the guy says, oh, well, there's nothing to that. I'll keep this going. And so he goes down in the basement, first time he's seen it. He never saw it before, see, the kid. He walks down, and there's his old man. Looks exactly like real life. Exactly like he always looked. And he's wearing his knickers. He's got on his sweater. And he's casually holding an Arnold Palmer model driver with a whip steel shaft. And he's casually teeing up a ball on the seventh tee of his favorite country club. You know, Old Smoky Country Club. Looks exactly like the machinery is going. It's got tremendous refrigeration unit that's keeping the old man looking groovy. He looks exactly the way he looked, even better than he did in life. You know, he looks great. He's got his hat on. He's got his wearing his golf cap, whole bit. And you can see he's got his favorite golf cart is in the case with him there. You know, the one with the STP sticker on the back and all that. And he's about to tee up a ball on the seventh. And there's a faint smile playing about his face. He doesn't look dead. He looks alive. Really alive. A faint smile of evil irony. He is about to tee up for the final drive. The ultimate shot into the rough. Well, the kid comes down. He looks at the old man. You know, he's astounded. He figures the old man any minute. I was going to say something. It looks just exactly the way he looks in life, you know? He's standing there. And the machine is going, chunga, 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 chunga. You could hear the whole machine pounding. Tremendous refrigeration unit down the basement. Chunga, 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 chunga. It's not easy, you know, to keep a guy looking exactly the way he looks in life, especially if he's standing on the seventh tee there of his favorite golf course. Chunga, 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 chunga. It's booming away. Well, the kid goes back upstairs. He pours himself a little bit of the old man's favorite sherry, has a little Stilton cheese, calls up a couple of his buddies and says, come on over. And I'm reading this. See, I'm in study hall reading this. So his friends come over and they sit and say, well, the old man finally kicked off. I guess you got all the dough. He says, well, yeah, except for one thing. He says, what's the one thing? He says, we hear that sound? It's going in the basement. Well, the old man's down there. Come on, you want to go down and take a look at him? And so they come down, and all of them, his friends, come down. And there's the old guy sitting there,
Or standing. He's just casually leaning. He's still got his golf club. Smiling with a vague, ironical smile out at the world. Now, I'm telling you, I'm beginning to sweat now. I'm reading this. All the other kids in the study hall are reading stuff like, Lady of the Lake. There's a couple of them, reading stuff like Julius Caesar, the Latin business, And I'm reading this evil story, having a traumatic experience. Have you ever thought of getting your old man preserved, keeping him in a basement, in a tank? Just like he was in real life. Shh, whap. Yeah. Well, this machine kept pounding. And 10, 15 days went by. 20 days went by. The kid is living it up pretty good. He's living in a big house. Once in a while, there's a big party. And then it came. The first month's electric bill arrived. It is $13,942 to keep the old man down in the basement. The thing is gone. The kid is staggered. He calls up the electric company. He says, "What is this? Is this a mistake?" He says, "No. That thing uses electricity like you never believed. But the guy's got to do it. If he turns it off, forget it. The lawyer's there in a second. Zap. The international chicken farmers have got all their scratch. The dough." The second month, the third month go by. And at the end of 18 months, the old man's fortune is reduced to zero. The old man discovered the secret. You can take it with you. Well, thank you. Thank you, Nick. Oh, I'm sitting at home. Smokes. Thinking about that. Well, that's not the kind of stuff that a 14-year-old kid, is used to absorbing. So that night, after I read that story, by the way, I'm curious, did anybody ever, any of you, read that story? Ever hear of it? I have never met anybody else who read it. Never. Maybe I didn't read it at all. Maybe it was wish projection. Seeing my old man down in the basement. Although, if he was to be caught in his favorite sport, have you ever thought, can you imagine yourself getting laid away in your favorite, your favorite activity? It could be great, And so, I don't know whether this story really existed or not, but I always remember this fantastic, refrigerated, thumping, gigantic, machinery-ridden mausoleum. Which reminds me, speaking of mausolea, this is WOR, New York. Gigantic, electrically driven, ice-tinged. Half of the people around here are frozen in those same positions. You could take entire offices here if you can encase them in plastic. Pump out the air real quick, and refrigerate it. The guys wouldn't even know it. They'd all be sitting there, their paper cup full of coffee from the chock full of nuts. Their hand reaching out to grope for a passing member of the stenography pool. About to make a call for lunch. I'd love to see John Diatolo frozen forever in his favorite position, calling up a buddy over at the YNR for lunch. There he is, frozen eternally, sitting with the phone up to his desk, just like that. Bob Alden, can you imagine Bob Alden frozen forever? As he's sitting there with a vaguely bugged look on his face as he's thinking of the newest thing he's going to get at Abercrombie & Fitch, that new electrical driven wilderness model can opener. He's sitting there. Oh, yeah, you can buy one of those, for your tent. It's wind-driven, for those of you, people who don't have electricity up there. You're really roughing it, And so, but I'm thinking about the story. Oh, my God, what a story. So I go home. By the way, this is New York. Thought you ought to know that. Don't get mad. We're not coming from Indianapolis. This is the big time. You're listening to big stuff here. Oh, yeah.
I'm, you know. So I go home that night, and I can't get this story out of my mind, see? And so the old man comes running into the kitchen. He used to come home about 6 o'clock at night. See, I'd get home from school about 4:30, 5 o'clock, something like that, you know, fooling around on the way back down at George's candy store and stuff like that. So I come home, you know, I'm sitting in the kitchen, and the old man comes run up the back steps. He always run up, bang, slams the door open. And he was the kind, you know, that by the time he'd hit the middle of the linoleum in the kitchen, roughly 8 feet from the door, he was halfway undressed. He would drop his clothes as he runs in, see? And by the time he hits the dining room, he's down to nothing but his long johns, you know, with the buttons off, flying everywhere. So he sits down at the kitchen table, opens a can of beer, wearing his BVDs. Oh, what a day at the office. And he starts sucking at the can of beer. Oh, he was great. I mean, have you ever heard of a creative burper? I mean, the burp as an art form has always appealed to me. I've known people who could burp an entire, well, 8, maybe 9 octave range. Tremendous depth, great body, staying power, that's what counts. You know, get that staying power in there. And, you know, a lot of people have these little little things like that. But the old man, he lets it go, seeing the window shutter. And he's drinking the beer, reading the paper. White Sox have dropped 19 straight. Sitting there, you know. And I see him then. I see him half through the haze, and I'm watching him. I can see him in a glass case down in the basement, down by the coal bin, you know. I can see him there, sitting in his favorite position, with a can of Blatt's beer in his hand, see? Preserved forever in his BVDs, drinking a can of beer, reading the sport page, getting mad because, you know, the Sox have dropped their 19th consecutive game, haven't scored a run since late May. There he's sitting. How could you, can you imagine people in your family preserved in their thing, their way? How do you see people in your house? I mean, how do you see them? If I, instead of word association, let's have people association. You know, if I come up to you and says, "Cousin Fred," how do you see him? Looking kind of silly in a half developed picture out of somebody's Instamatic. Is that the way you see him, or do you see him real? You know, you see him preserved. I'm thinking of the old man now, sitting there preserved, with the machinery pounding in the basement. He's forever drinking a can of beer. Forever looking bugged because the Sox have missed another one. He looks up at me and says, "What are you doing? What's the matter with you? You're looking kind of sick." He had an instinct like that. I said, wait, what do you mean? I've never been a good liar. What do you mean? He says, "What's eating you?" By the way, I had the hippest old man, quite possibly since Genghis Khan. He was extremely hip, really was. I mean, it's very discouraging to discover that your old man is hipper than you are. You know, most kids automatically assume they're hipper than their old man, but how would you handle an old man who, spent the formative years of his life being a top pool shark? Can you actually believe that you could be hipper than him? You know, I mean, it's like spending your life with a, you know, he was a hustler, really. I mean, he was a great pool player. When he was 16, he used to go around and hustle guys. So I'm looking at the old man, and he says, "What's eating you?" I said, "Nothing." He says, "Oh, yeah? It'll come out." I said, "Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong." Then I look over, and I see my old lady, see? She's leaning over the stove. And she is stirring a red cabbage. And she's wearing this rump-sprung chenille bathrobe. It's kind of a Chinese red, see? It's got the petrified egg on the lapel, see? And she's stirring away there. She's got her hair up in curlers. She had these aluminum rheostats that she wore in her head, you know? And she's stirring away at the red cabbage. And then I see her, frozen forever, all the time, in a glass case. with the machine. Yeah, and what is she doing? She's hanging over the sink, see, with a Brillo pad. She's wearing a Chinese red chenille bathrobe, rump sprung. Got her hair up in these aluminum rheostats. And she's looking down at the sink. And the sink is just going... Where'd this sink used to talk to us like that all the time, you know, just... Every once in a while, no warning at all. We're sitting there, you know, dinner time, eating away there, and all of a sudden the sink goes... My mother get up and go over and look down at it. And up would come, like, you know, four or five cups full of old used coffee grounds from next door. Not ours, next door. See, we used to exchange our garbage back and forth would come through the sink. Or once in a while, like, an apple cord come up. One time a fish came up. He was alive. So what are you going to do, you know? Yeah, he came up, he's flopping around. I just really a fish. So I see him, you know, frozen there forever and all time. All these moments of Satori, you know, these moments of total insight. You don't want to have them, kid. Just steer clear of them. They're not good for you. Corrode your brain. Bad news. I mean, it's like the other day, I get this letter from this guy. See, talking about, you know, total brain corrosion. The other day I was mentioning, if you remember, I was talking about how great the starlings are. You know, it says the starling is a bird that is just like people. That's why people hate him. He's the only competitor we got. Oh, yeah, he's sneaky, dirty, walks around, talks out of the side of his beak. This is not the bluebird of happiness, obviously. Oh, yeah. A starling is capable of... You teach a starling how to talk, and you know what the first thing out of his mouth is? I don't have to tell you what it would be. Because I've seen it happen. That's right. Starling is the only bird that can be taught to swear, but who understands it knows exactly what he's saying. Which is not the same as that little budgie. You teach him to say something he doesn't know, you know. And quacks. But a good starling, he uses the words right. So we hate him. So a guy hears that and he says, Shepherd, he says, you frequently compare man to such animals as the starling. And the cockroach, you are correct. They are with us. And that's one of the reasons why we recognize a rival. You know, man, people always instinctively recognize a rival. You know, you're sitting with this chick, you know, in this place, in a fancy restaurant. This guy comes up. He says, oh, how are you, Charlie? Instantly you recognize, oh, this guy's not talking to me. He's trying to make the scene with his chick. I could tell that. You recognize it instantly. The rival detecting mechanism in man is infallible. I'll let you think about that for a minute. I'll marinate your head for a while with that one. But it is. You can detect a rival instantly. That's why most writers hate all other writers. Terrible. Oh, yeah. Now, when they're being officially interviewed, they'll say something. But listen, in the kitchen, what do you think in the kitchen when Mailer's fooling around, you know, in and out of the refrigerator, and his wife says, what do you think of Kurt Vonnegut? Oh, believe me, man. It is bad news. So the instinct revival detection, the instinct detection instrument is very acute. We recognize that when all is said and done and the earth gets cool, you know, they're fine. Do you know that many scientists believe we're on the beginnings of another ice age? Did you know that? You didn't? Really? Are you kidding? You didn't know that? As a matter of fact, there was a big piece in one of the big British newspapers recently, one of the top geophysical organizations, of finding that they had definite evidence. In fact, they feel very, very, it's not even a theory any longer. They feel it's a fact that we are in the beginning of another ice age, that there have been four massive ice ages that have been charted geophysically, geologically, and they feel that we are in the beginning of the fifth major ice age, and that the one of the curious things that they can't quite figure out is that the changes occur quite rapidly when they begin. In other words, there is a great quiescent period in the earth. Like, for example, when an ice age is in the middle of the ice age, it remains static for a long time. And it will be just that way. There it is. Now, as it's changing from ice age to, let's say, a non-ice age, whatever that would be called,
the change is sudden and almost precipitous, without very much explanation. Suddenly, the ice will begin to retreat up to the ice cap, and it will retreat very quickly. And then there will begin a period like we're just supposedly finishing, in which the Earth will be relatively stable for millions of years, and nothing will happen. The ice will remain pretty much where it is. And then all of a sudden, zap, in a period of comparative short historical time, the ice age will return, and return very quickly. And they say it takes a remarkably short period of time. And so there is a lot of belief today that, people keep saying winters aren't the same as they used to be and summers aren't the same as they used to be. You've heard this. How many times have you heard this? Many times. That actually this is true. That it is actually true. And even though guys can bring out statistics that in 1888 it was only 1 degree, they say that that 1 or 2 degrees, friend, is crucial in this discussion. Even though it may only be 1 degree cooler or 1 degree warmer, that is a crucial degree. And that there is a tremendous difference. And also, we're always talking about, generally when they trot these statistics out, they're talking about average of the year. They're now beginning to say that the average isn't what counts. What does count is the extremes. In other words, it could conceivably get much hotter or much colder in one given time. But the belief that there is an advancing ice age is being held by a lot of people. I mean, serious scientists. And so they feel that within a couple hundred years, you know, a lot of the theories, a lot of the ideas that people have of the future, you don't see many science fiction stories written along that base. Because most writers are not really interested in environment. they're interested in, you know, sex, passion, soul, man, and so forth. But that's one of the things that bother me, reading so many writers, is that it's like the people don't even live in the world. You read Philip Roth, it never rains, it never snows, nothing, you know. Everybody just sits around and kvetches all the time. There's just no outside world. Well, this is a very, very minute, partially obscured vision of man. That we are all affected by this, no matter whether you're bugged or not, whether you're sensitive or not. It still rains. It rains on the hard hats and the hippies alike, friend. And there it is. It gets cold and it gets warm. It gets cold and it gets warm and the ice comes down. And hardly anybody ever writes a science fiction story based in the year, say, 3890, when it's all over. The year 3890 and nothing but a great sheet of ice lays quietly over what was once Staten Island, 70 feet thick. It extends all the way to Costa Rica, a great sheet of ice. And there's a tiny band around the waistline of the globe where the temperature occasionally rises to the low 50s. And vast gales come howling out of the north. Month in, month out, year in, year out, eon in and eon out. A vast ice age. And new animals roam the globe that have come about because of this ice age. Great hairy apes. Enormous paddle-footed mammoth elephants. Covered with shaggy fur. And a few scurrying turtle-like creatures dart in and out of the flickering waters of the equatorial tide. This is what's left of man, struggling to hide from that cold blue sun. Boy, that'll take care of all you guys that dig skiing. I'm serious. That this is an absolute theory that is being held. I'm not just, you know, throwing it out. But this guy writes me his letter. He says, Shepard, he says, you know, you talk about the starling and the cockroach, and it's quite true. Man recognizes a rival.
that when all of that is done, the cockroach is going to survive. You know, he's persisted almost unchanged throughout all these eons. Absolutely unchanged. You can freeze him, he'll wake up, boy, when it... and that, you just unfreeze the ice cube that you have frozen this cockroach. Try it. Take a cockroach. Put him in an ice cube. You know, you're at home in the refrigerator. Take one of the ice cube trays, you know, filled with water, put a couple of cockroaches in there, and then freeze them. See what happens. And then a couple of days later, unfreeze it. I mean, that's a little home experiment. Imagine somebody come in and says, I want... These damn cockroaches are everywhere. Look, there's one in the ice cube now. Oh, man. But never... boy, that's I immediately think of about 10 dirty tricks you can play on people. You imagine a guy asking for, you know, he's all a martini on the rocks, Charlie, go ahead. And this is about the third one. You see, you wait till he's on his about his fourth martini, see, and he's sitting there, and there's a cockroach looking out at him from the ice cube, and he can't figure out whether it's real or not. Yeah, it's bad. I'm sorry, I'm a terrible person, but that but nevertheless, I'm thinking about this. You know, these starlings and these starlings and the cockroaches surviving. This guy says, Shepherd, I live in Staten Island where the horseshoe crab is plentiful. And he says, I have gotten some opportunity to study the horseshoe crab. Like man, the horseshoe crab thrives in the midst of garbage. The horseshoe crab, that's right. The horseshoe crabs will gleefully swim in the oil, the beer cans, and cigar butts. They seem to be not troubled at all by it. Well, how many times have you seen guys over in these beaches on Long Island swim among the cigar butts and the beer cans? You know, it never bothers them. He says, some horseshoe crabs have even been known to frequent the, quote, waters off New Jersey. And as you know, those waters off New Jersey, you have to sometimes slice them. It says the horseshoe crab has an intense sex drive. Maybe you didn't know this about horseshoe crabs. During the mating season, the Staten Island beaches are the scenes of incredible crab orgies. Horseshoe crabs are herd animals. A group of them will get together on the beach, drinking beer, smoking L&Ms, and telling dirty jokes. He says, quite often you'll see them all gathered in a little crowd. They're hanging around, you know, and they're very much like animals. He says, so when all is said and done, the world will be eventually populated by starlings, cockroaches, crabgrass, horseshoe crabs, and man. All fighting it out for the last place. he says, incidentally, the horseshoe crab has remained virtually unchanged, exactly like the cockroach, has remained virtually unchanged for millions of years. They are descendants of the prehistoric trilobites. Right. Well, he's not kidding. Now, a lot of people in the city here have never really dealt with nature. You know, they don't see much of it. And their idea of nature is a, you know, Saturday afternoon television show with Marlon Perkins. That's nature, see, sponsored by an insurance company. Have you noticed that insurance companies are always sponsoring nature shows? Think about that for a minute. I wonder what the connection is. There has to be some psychological connection. That's true, you know, when you think about it. There's always some Mutual of Omaha is always bringing you the Wild Kingdom. And if I'm not right, I think an insurance company sponsored the Flipper or something, didn't they, at one time? Insurance companies, yeah, they're always bringing you these animals, you know. I wonder, you know, poor Flipper. I saw Flipper at the Equity office the other day. You know, he's out of work now. And, his agent is really bugged. He says, you know, he fought from the very beginning, you know, when they put Flipper on. You remember the show. That he was obviously typecast. And sure, I mean, this is obvious discrimination. And they want him to be, I don't blame him, you know. It's easy enough to be, if you're a fish, to be cast as a fish, but it's not so easy to get the role of the ingenue, you know, or the leading man. So he's out of work, like a lot of other people. One of the, all set in there? Just be calm. No problem. But play it easy. Listen to Jerry. Listen to Nick. It'll work out, friend. Yes, sir. There ain't no... I'll give you one word of warning, though. It is more than a coincidence that a synonym for the devil over the years has been Nick. That's true. You've never heard the devil called Mike or Fred. Old Fred, you know, old evil Charlie. It's always Nick. In thousands of different languages. Okay, Nick? Maybe that'll explain some things to your old man, right? Okay? But nevertheless, I had one of the spookiest experiences of my life involved another very basic creature. And have any of you ever seen, I don't know what the relationship with the horseshoe crab is, but one time, and this is a story, it's not the kind of story that you're going to see in the Wild Kingdom. It's just a strange moment. And I was in the Army at this time. And I was in a place that was complete tropics. I mean, so hot. Oh, man. The temperature was about, average in the daytime, 100, 105. And at night, it would drop down to 90. You could feel, it was really felt cool at night when it was 90 degrees. And the humidity was always 85%, 90, 95. Everything was sweating. You'd sit in the tent. We had these little pup tents, you know, shelter half tents, and the sun would bake down on them all day long. And you could just see the canvas, the shelter half, just sweating. You couldn't figure out where the moisture came from, just sweating all the time. Sand, Spanish grass, scrubs. Yeah, they had a couple of snakes that were interesting there, too. In fact, there was one snake in that area there that they said that if the snake bit you, and by the way, it didn't really bite. You know, you're used to thinking, when you think of a snake biting, he strikes. And you think of a cobra striking, biting. You think of a rattler. When he strikes, he bites. A curious kind of snake. Do you know that there's a deadly snake that doesn't bite? It chews? I'm serious. Very serious. This snake doesn't hurt you at all when it bites. He just sort of grabs a hold of you and just sort of chews. And then you've got about 5 seconds. That's the end of the ball game, the end of the road. What snake am I talking about? You know anything about that snake? That snake does not grow over, quite possibly the biggest one is around 13, 14 inches. Tiny snake. Averages about 10 inches, 12 inches. And even the baby ones, this thing may have babies, and little tiny things are about the size of a worm, really, are intensely, totally deadly. And they're beautiful. Quite possibly the most beautiful of all snakes, if you can call a snake beautiful, given that qualifying clause. Well, here we had these snakes around, so we'd see them once in a while. And you rarely ever see them, by the way, because they spend most of their time in, like down on the bottom of scrub grass, buried. You don't even see them. They're like in stumps. One of the guys was killed in our outfit. I didn't know the guy, but he's in another company. But another guy was with him at the time. And they were digging up these stumps. It's a Signal Corps outfit. And the guy says, "Hey, look at this." And he reaches down, and this thing got him. Just gently. Just sort of grabbed a hold of him like that. And he was dead, just like that. Now, one day, I'm in a Jeep with another guy, and we were riding along a trail, just a long one-track road that had been laid in there, and the palm trees are arching overhead, hot. All of a sudden, he says, "What's that?" And he stops and kind of says, "What, do you hear that? What's the sound there? What's that sound?" And we could hear something coming from our right. Through the undergrowth. You hear this stuff. Strange sound. What's the sound? And all of a sudden, he says, "What the hell is that?" coming out of the palmettos, you saw this great black, strange-looking blanket that was kind of advancing. It was making a skittering, crazy, skittering, chittering sound. So what's that? And that next instant, the entire Jeep is surrounded by these things. It covers the whole road for about 30 feet behind us and about 100 yards ahead of us. Just a tremendous blanket. They were evil, strange, spastic-looking creatures. Like a curious nightmare of nature. Thousands of them. We just sat in the Jeep and waited till they just moved on past. We waited for 40 minutes. We were in the middle of a migrating herd of land crabs. Have you ever seen land crabs? Tremendous things. Great, long, enormous feelers. Eyes and a chittering sound. Like a million strange, distorted spiders, land crabs by the thousands moving. I sat there with this guy. Metropolis. Metropolis had never been out of the city in his life until he got in Company K. Metropolis is the color of used pasta. He is white. So what's that? I said, I don't know, man. The earth has got the worst looking case of crabs I ever saw. Look at that. Unbelievable. He said, I ain't getting out of this Jeep. We just sat there, and they just kept moving. Around the tires, around the front and back, under the Jeep, just a great herd of them. And suddenly, just as quickly as they came, they're gone. Nothing. The land crabs had disappeared. The migration took maybe 45 minutes to get across that road. There must have been 200,000 of them, or better. And do you know, for months after that, we didn't see a single land crab? I wonder where they went. Oh, what's the name of the snake? You're curious about the snake? Somebody called him Sir David Merrick. It's not him. He doesn't nibble like that. He strikes like a hooded cobra. Now, that'll be your homework for tonight. That'll appear in the Blue Book exam for next semester. Bring it up big. Thank you.
Did you know...